Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Beneath the streets of London, there is another London, a somewhere that is neverwhere.
Benedict Cumberbatch and James McAvoy lead a stellar cast in a BBC radio adaptation of Neil Gaiman's best-selling novel.
Start listening to Neverwhere now with a 1 month free trial to Stitcher Premium.
Go to StitcherPremium.com/BBC and use promo code BOND at checkout to get your free month.
You'll also hear the original Flight of the Conchords and Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy series from the BBC.
That's StitcherPremium.com/BBC and use promo code BOND.
Now, on with the show.
Hello,
listeners, and welcome to the James Bonding Podcast, GoldenEye Revisited. I'm Matt Gourley, here to give you a little intro, information, and news up front. There was a small, but almost warm and welcoming, analog-sounding technical issue throughout some of this episode, mostly at the end. We took great pains to fix it in post. Many hours. Long story. But it's almost all gone. You might notice a little bit of it there. Apologies up front. Also, thank you so much to all the people. Literally hundreds. It's mind-blowing. The amount of people that wrote in to be our social media liaison. We're going to probably announce that next episode. And before we begin with the GoldenEye review with our guest Steve Agee, I'd like to check in with our man in the East, Phil Nobile Jr., to give us what might be even an exclusive word on the street about the current state of Bond, Daniel Craig, and what's coming for Bond 25. Let's check in with him now. Phil, our man in the East, thanks for taking some time to check in with us again.
Anytime, man.
All right, so what's the scuttlebutt on the street? What's the dirt? What's the goss? What's the haps?
Well, there's nothing official, and I need to chastise you guys a little bit because on the podcast which I appeared, you were buying all the tabloid stuff about he's officially back and he's doing two and he's getting 150 million. I think it was Matt Myra more than you.
Well, but, you know, you're right. Let me defend myself. When I see something in print in the old gray lady, the New York Times, all the news that's fit to print, I consider that sourced. And maybe if the sources aren't printed, I consider that a non-fake news, you know, a reliable news source, as I do you. So we'll take this all with a grain of salt. But I actually appreciate you calling us out on our journalistic integrity. And I think we need more of it. So good.
Well, yeah. I mean, the New York Times did say that, like, they think that he's all but confirmed, but they were, you know, that's the closest I've heard to a real thing.
Right. You know? That leads us to what we're here to talk about today, because as this podcast drops on Tuesday the 15th, you're hearing rumblings that we might maybe hear something today?
I have. I've heard that we're going to hear something on August 15th, and that might or might not have anything to do with the fact that Daniel Craig is going to be on The Late Show with Stephen Colbert tonight. And maybe they are going to announce something in advance of that, or maybe he's going to announce on that show. I know if I was producing Logan Lucky, I'd be kind of upset that all this Bond 25 chatter is eclipsing my movie.
Right, right. And, you know, your prediction was that they wanted to let him have that before announcing anything. But I was also wondering if maybe the Bond producers are a little savvy and are trying to ride that wave.
I feel like they don't need that wave so much. This is a small movie. It's a weird thing to kind of latch onto if they're trying to attach their stuff to that. Because my prediction, as much as I thought it was the true one, kind of got upended when they announced Bond 25, November 8th, 2019, like right before Logan Lucky came out, which I thought was a weird move.
Yeah, it's a slight sniping. I don't know.
I'm trying to read the tea leaves, but it's hard to figure it out. Now, I just yelled at you about unofficial news, but I'm going to tell you some other unofficial stuff that I've heard. And I don't want to get anybody in trouble. I don't even know this person, but there's a Bond collector's sort of area on the web where people chit-chat. And there's a guy on there who always seems to have stuff from set. He always seems to have an inside track on stuff. And then he has said some things which have panned out. So this is coming from that guy.
Okay.
He's saying Craig is definitely returning and that he thinks he's doing two back-to-back. Now, I have a problem with that because Craig was very vocal about not doing two back-to-back.
But that's also what the big papers are reporting, right? The trusted sources that I went all in for.
Yeah, I don't know how trusted they are, but the New York Times didn't say back to back. The New York Times said he's coming back.
Okay, I got this. Is why we need you. This is why we need you here, because Matt and I were too casual. We're like we've said, lovers, not experts. But we bring in the experts to clear it up. So consider Phil's reading of these our reading. So let us tack on to you.
Let's throw in the middle of that. That at TCA, the Nevins, the CEO of Showtime, talked about this miniseries Purity and said, well, he's doing Bond first, which is a weird thing to just drop in the middle of your Showtime announcement. He said that Craig is definitely doing Bond next.
Yeah,
so
see,
that's
really
an insider.
Right. That's interesting to me. And it feels like if that guy knows that, he would have to know that because they're doing this show. I'm surprised more hasn't leaked, and it sort of lends credence to all we've been hearing, because it sounds to me like if it's gotten that far and enough people at enough different companies have to know that, it would have leaked, and maybe that's what we're hearing. So I would put my money down on this.
Right. I'm just always pushing back against things that I want to be true. I got to like check myself.
and not just
buy in. But
that's smart.
Back to my unofficial guy. Here's another thing that he said. He said that if he's doing two back-to-back, he thinks it means that we'll see less action and more character-driven plots.
Oh, I like that.
Which is an interesting thing.
Yeah.
Because maybe if they told Craig, you know, maybe if you just mosey through this like Roger Moore, we can knock out two, and you won't have to go in the hospital with a bad knee. Who knows?
Interesting. Now,
I'm into that idea.
What else can you tell us about the initials TH?
Okay, this is the same guy, and this is just flat-out gross gossip. I had nothing to back this up.
Okay, full disclaimer.
And he says that another bloke was signed up if Craig didn't take the option offered. His initials are TH, but not the one I thought. Now, this guy was very vocally saying that Hiddleston had an offer once upon a time. So he's saying he's a different TH. And he said he signed up to do it if DC didn't take them up on their offer. It was enough for Craig to decide, as apparently he was the last person he wanted to take the role after himself.
So that's Tom Hardy, we're assuming?
We have to assume it's Tom Hardy. And I am curious to know, I asked some of my like blogger pals who are more embedded than me in Los Angeles, and they said that lots and lots of actors hate Tom Hardy.
Why?
I don't know. I think maybe some kind of on-set shenanigans. I think he's a big personality.
Oh.
You know? Maybe causes an extreme reaction. They work together in Layer Cake. I don't know anything about their history beyond that.
Oh, interesting. Now, see, that's funny because, I'm with you on the it's not that I'm dubious about that necessarily, but whenever it comes to personal gossip, it feels like once that gets translated through more than two or three people, their own opinions get attached to it. And so, you know, I'd say take that one with a huge grain of salt, but it's very interesting that it's not Tom Hiddleston we're hearing about, it's Tom Hardy. And then that leads me to wonder how close was Christopher Nolan to that package if Daniel Craig didn't come back.
Right. And this guy also weighs in on that. He says Nolan wanted to do three films, which I'm having trouble buying. I mean, he did three Batman movies, but I feel like that the Nolan of 2017 is not jumping onto a franchise for three movies.
Very interesting. Very interesting. Wow. Well, Phil, I can't thank you enough, for giving us the dirt, but also setting what we know to be true straight. and we'll check in with you more. Is there anything else we need to talk about today?
I don't think so, and I think it's exciting that we might be hearing something official by the time this is in our ears.
Do you have a prediction personally?
I think he'll say he's coming back.
For two?
I don't think he's going to say two. I think if there is two, that's still insider junk. And I almost don't want him to do two. I kind of just want to see him do a swan song.
Yeah, it would be interesting if it is two, how they're going to draw that out. I'm very curious. So, well, hopefully, as you're listening to this, maybe it'll be a matter of hours before we hear something. Phil, I can't thank you enough. And the world is better having you out there looking out for these things.
It is my pleasure to be part of your bonding podcast.
Friend. Okay. We'll talk to you more as more news develops. Phil Nobile Jr., our man in the East.
Take care.
And now we bring you GoldenEye Revisited with Steve Agee.
Podcast.
Well, here we are for James Bonding, our first movie discussion of season two. And our guest today. I can't tell.
AG. Steve.
AG Steve.
No. Steve AG.
Steve AG. You go by initials?
It's AGEE.
Anyway, I'm Matt Gourley.
I'm Matt Myra.
And this is James Bonding. Today's discussion, GoldenEye. Matt, your pick.
Do you want to? Bum, bum,
bum. Bum, 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 bum.
Song, of course, written by
Bono and the Edge, right?
That's correct.
Yeah. So, Matt, this was your choice. Tell us again why this is where you wanted to start. You won the coin toss.
We've had somewhat of a distance between our love affair. I call it a love affair. You call it a disdain for Pierce Brosnan.
Well, let's start off on a good footing. A complicated relationship.
Okay, fair enough. We just hadn't done a Pierce Brosnan movie in a while, and he was my Bond. He was the one I hit the wheelhouse with.
Is that true?
Yeah, he was. My favorite is Roger Moore, late great, but I was 13 when I saw Tomorrow Never Dies. And sorry, guys, I'm much younger than you. Yet, I pulled my back getting out of bed this morning.
Well, I had vertigo at 5 a.m. took a Benadryl, so I'm a zombie.
Matt, what are your physical ailments
today? I woke up and did a decathlon.
A deck? A whole deca?
Yeah, I built 10 decks of cards.
Yeah, so, you know, I wanted you to sort of revisit Pierce Brosnan, and I thought, why not get back in with his first foray into the Bond franchise?
I'll tell you what, I was happy to do it. And last night, Amanda was working.
Mm-hmm.
I had the place to myself. I threw on GoldenEye, and it just was good to get back to a Bond film.
It's like a old friend.
So it's GoldenEye. What year are we talking? 94, 95? I can't remember.
I believe this was 1995.
Okay. That's right. Yeah.
Mid-90s. This was after the legal troubles and after Timothy Dalton bid farewell, and there was a script written for the Timothy Dalton James Bond movie.
That's right. It was like China-based, wasn't
it? Yes, Hong Kong. They were scheduled to shoot and everything in 1990. And the franchise got caught up in the legal trouble where the people that bought MGM wanted to sell off the rights to James Bond. Cubby Broccoli was not having it. So there was a very long legal battle that only got resolved in 1993, I think.
So they cleared up their legal issues. Brosnan was finally clear of his Remington Steele contract, which precluded him from doing the Dalton era movies. And here we are with this long-awaited Pierce Brosnan as Bond.
What I wonder is how long Pierce Brosnan, had he been available to do, Living Daylights, would he have been James Bond from 1986 to 2004?
That's a good question. I think he would have.
Yeah.
Definitely.
You're saying America wouldn't have gone for it?
Well, it did lead me to this. And now it's no secret that Brosnan is maybe my least favorite of the Bonds. Mm-hmm. I still love Bond movies and I still like
him. You like him less than Timothy Dalton?
I do, yeah. Wow. I like Dalton. But I don't want to say that I dislike Brosnan. I'd like to clear that up.
Yeah. All right, so you're on the record.
I do think of all the Bonds, he's the one that wants to be Bond more than, like, he needs Bond more than Bond needs him. Does that make sense?
I gotta say, he's the one of all the people who've played James Bond, he's the one that looks like he smells the best.
Oh, no doubt.
Yeah,
he and looks, I bet he like smells like he smells gentleman. The best too.
He looks like you just, oh, it's like
he looks great in this
pine.
Movie. He looks so good. His hair is just like, I don't know, it's not as high and tight as it is in the other movies. It's a little more flowing. He just looks
but
good.
We don't even see his hair until he the close-up of him
when that, he's hanging when upside yeah. down. That's true. But you assume you see him running, but the first close-up is him hanging upside down, and he's already got full lustrous hair. Hanging upside down gives it so much more body.
It is, really. I think perhaps shampoo ads should photograph upside down.
They probably
oh
do.
My God,
but it also it. That scene also made me think, like, what's the best Bond reveal of the Bond, the first shot of Bond.
That's interesting.
And I think that this may be down there for me because he's hanging upside down.
Oh,
in a
I'm
crapper.
Sorry. You said down there?
Yeah.
You meant up there, right?
Well,
let's think about them.
Okay, you can't argue that Connery's is not the best reveal because it's at the Baccarat table.
Sure, he's at
table.
The Baccarat table. He's got a cigarette in his mouth, and the first words out of his mouth are Bond, James Bond.
James Bond. I mean, that's undisputed, right?
Yeah.
Steven.
It's
and
classic.
Then go ahead, tell us about the other five, Steve.
The other five James Bonds reveals. We got Roger Moore getting a back rub from an Asian lady.
You're not far off.
Is that real?
Well, Italian. But his reveal as far as like a shot is very forgettable. I don't remember what
I
it is.
I also don't remember what it is
so
as
we'll
well.
Put that down there.
Okay,
well.
But we skip Lazenby.
Yeah.
Whose first shot is on the beach.
Yeah, and kind of looking straight into camera. It's a little weird.
He's shampooing his head.
On the beach. With sand.
And so then Timothy Dalton.
I love Dalton. It's after the second, like, MI6 guy dies. And you hear
right.
the like, birds go. And it does a, like, kind of crash zoom on him as he turns around. I think it's great.
That is great. And then, of course, we have Pierce Brosnan hanging upside down while someone is shooting.
Right. Comedically, it's good.
You're talking the very first time we see this person.
But for gravitas, it doesn't do much for me. And then Daniel Craig's is in black and white. So then his first reveal of Bond is either the gun barrel or him in Madagascar.
Yes.
But I think it's still his reveal as the character is that black and white shot of him sitting in the chair that I think is pretty cool. It's low key.
He's not a 00 yet.
All right. Steve, where do you weigh in on this?
I think it's Madagascar.
It sounds like the next Bond girl's name.
Madagascar.
All right, so
Pussy
let's get into this.
Pussy Madagascar.
Pussy.
Do we start with the gun barrel sequence?
Let's start with the gun barrel sequence. I think he does a great one. I think he does one that doesn't need to be reshot ever.
I have mixed feelings.
Tell me, why do you have mixed feelings about this? You don't like how smooth he moves? How handsome he looks?
I think his walk is killer. He's great. He's got a good stride. He's confident.
You're talking about the credit?
Yeah.
Thing? Oh, yeah.
But when he turns to fire and his stance, it looks more like he's slapping than he's firing a gun. Like he just kind of, I don't know what it is. It's just kind of.
You've got a pivot problem.
I think so. Pivot and execution, but the run up to it is top notch.
Dale Craig's is the best, I think.
Oh, it's so good.
Yep.
He's so precise with it, and he really looks like he's going to kill somebody.
And he's got three, technically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, Sean Connery's is not even Sean Connery.
No. Doesn't he do it at some point? I guess maybe he
does. I feel like he never did it.
Yeah.
I feel like they just kept using that one.
They may be right.
And then there is Roger Moore's, which is fine.
I like his end stance, though. In fact, he, of all the Bonds, has a trademark, like, gunfire thing where he kind of throws his left hand out to the side a little bit.
Out of balance when you shoot a gun.
You got a pirouette. It's very balletic.
But I think as he's throwing that arm out, it opens him up to getting shot in the left arm.
Mm-hmm.
It's really foolish.
I suppose so.
You want to be like a little tiny tree, you know?
That's true.
Yeah, you want to ball up. You go into fetal when you shoot a gun.
You want to get into child's pose on a yoga mat and fire that PPK.
Child's pose.
Downward Dog.
I'm a little baby. You're going to die.
I'm Jim Bond, not even Junior.
Just try and
I
hit me.
I want my titty milk shaken, not pumped.
Shaken, not pumped. Well, how are we going to get it to you? It has to pump out of a breast at some point.
Shake that titty first. Oh, God.
Oh, so you just want to shake the titty. Whatever comes out, that's what we're going
This
for.
Is just an inkling of the way this series is going to go.
Baby Bond.
Baby Bond.
The Baby Bond, sir. That'd be a great animated series, a Baby Bond.
This is my crib mate, Q. He gave me a baby bottle with cyanide in it. And I accidentally drank it.
This waddle detects radiation. My crib has an ejector button.
I would watch that cartoon. I would think of it as Muppet Babies, right?
Yeah.
It'd be that sort of thing. And we'd never see M, we'd just see her legs.
That's funny. I was going to say M is like 6 years old, but no, I think I like that better.
Yeah.
That's good.
And she or he speaks with the Charlie Brown muted trumpet.
Russians. You just have to hear key things of what his mission is.
And Baby Blofeld's the only one with hair.
Oh, Baby Blofeld's adorable. If you're out there and you like drawing, please do some character sketches for us.
And yes, Nick Knack is like 6 inches tall.
Nick Knack.
Nick Knack.
Tabasco. All right. So, gun barrel wise, I forget how quick these come because they've always been teasing them in the Daniel Craig ones. Like, they never happen when I want them to happen.
Right. You never know when they're going to come.
And it just felt quick to me now watching this Pierce Brosnan situation. Yeah. But let's talk about the opening pre-credit sequence, which is, you know, I like a James Bond movie where they add another 00 agent.
Mm.
You know, I like in Living Daylights.
Octopussy.
Yep. Another 00 goes down. Skyfall.
Right?
Well, there's the...
There's the discussion of the 00 program.
Did Ronson? You talking about Ronson?
No, what's his name from No Country for Old Men?
Oh, right.
That's right.
He was a 00.
Fucking AG schooling us.
We should have had him on the Skyfall episode.
Emma.
James. Long time no see.
Kincaid, you're still alive.
You've left me here to die alone.
Thanks for burning down the only place I live.
Yeah.
Never mind. I looked after it for years and you just burned it down. I guess I'll go live on the ice.
Thank God your parents left me that stipend. How else
My
am I
per
living?
Diem.
Also, I'm basically a useless character.
Why didn't I die?
I'm just here for sexual tension with Dame Judy Dench.
Sexual tension.
Talk about a spinoff. That is a spinoff I want to see where Kincaid and Emma go on holiday.
Oh,
to the first merry-go-round hotel or whatever
That's
it is.
Adorable.
I will say,
yes.
In the spirit of Brosnan appreciation, which is the way I'm going to approach this,
sure.
I think this is one of the top five cold opens in all of the series. I love this cold open.
Wow.
I really do. I always have. I think I'm on record even in the last time we did this.
Yeah.
And it's interesting. I was wondering when we go through these movies again, am I just going to say a bunch of the same shit that I did last time?
I was wondering
time?
Too.
I found nothing but new stuff to say.
I thought I should listen to see what I say previously.
No, I didn't go
and
that
And I did
far.
Not. So.
But I know a lot of the stuff is new. So it's
because
a good sign that we're going to have plenty to talk about.
Kinder eyes.
That's right. And that's a good way to go, I think.
Yeah.
I look forward to that 4-hour thunderball.
I do not. What do you what
the cold,
do
that
you...
cold open ends in the airplane, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
But I have a note that because bungee jumping was so popular at the time, that was such a big thing.
Sure.
And this is directed by Martin Campbell, who did Casino Royale. That's
crazy to
that
me.
The GoldenEye bungee jump is... Bungee jumping is to GoldenEye as parkour is to Casino Royale. Like, what's big at the time?
That's interesting. Nice set piece with extreme sports of the time.
And I found a couple of interesting similarities that they both, even though the parkour sequence isn't the cold open of Casino Royale, it's really the first set piece of it. They both kind of end with Bond at the mercy of a bunch of the enemies with guns and having use an explosion to get out of that situation. You know what I mean?
Right.
So he blows up the gas.
But this has the Bond trope of his survival relying completely on the yoke of an aircraft.
Which has occurred how many times?
A lot.
Yeah.
It's essentially just, let's make this aircraft go out of frame, and then we'll pull him out of it, and we'll hit the music.
Right, yeah. It's a good sequence, though, boy.
It really is, and it's so...
There's some corny shit in it, though.
Yeah.
In this particular sequence?
Yeah, when he's standing behind the roller with all the explosive tanks in it. And that seems so Austin Powers to me.
It did, just, but it's pre-Austin Powers, right? Or
it is, yes.
Yeah, I actually found that pretty funny and like kind of childishly like...
And charming.
Like cute in a way.
Here's what I don't understand. So in an effort to escape that room, he hits the button on the conveyor belt.
Yeah.
And when he jumps on the conveyor belt, he shoots an AK-47 at...
A lock, maybe?
A lock or a hinge or something that then drops and just barrels upon barrels of gasoline are falling down. Why is gasoline stored that way?
Yeah.
There's
is
no
it liquid gasoline? Wasn't it like a
so
vapor
if you unhook that in the room just for your job,
yeah. Yeah.
Everything would just come yeah. flying out.
Oh, it's like the trick they play on the new guy. Hey, we need a new tank. You want to
no,
go
but
get
that,
it?
That gasoline is specifically for action set pieces.
Oh, okay.
Was that what it is?
Yeah, this is a Russian film studio.
Oh.
They're on a set.
That's the only thing. Here's something else that I've started to... in my old age, curmudgeonly get wise to is just the fact that things shouldn't explode with that much fire unless they're primed with fuck tons of gasoline. So the explosion of this facility makes sense to me.
Yeah.
But later in the movie, when the helicopter goes down
yeah.
with Xenia on top,
yeah.
the amount of fire that's in that
wasn't
is like
a pretty
the entire,
hefty gas tank in that, I would think.
Yeah, but it looked like the entire cockpit was full of gasoline.
Yeah. Yeah.
The way it burns.
Martin Campbell is the star of this film, I have to say. Though.
What?
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, I noticed this the last time we watched Casino Royale, how elegantly he directs action without calling too much attention to his direction. Like, you know, those Bourne movies are all about, look at how the camera moves and everything. This opening sequence is shot so simply but effectively. And like when
it's precise,
yeah. When Alec and Bond open the vent and they're it's shot from below. It's just sometimes I watch it just for the direction and never notice how good it is because yeah. it just flows so nice. I Martin Campbell, it's crazy. He did these two amazing Bond films.
I just realized last night that he did Casino Royale, and I was
yeah,
I couldn't believe it.
Yeah,
but what I mean, he did Green Lantern.
He did Green Lantern,
which was a huge flop. I haven't seen Zorro. What else did he do?
I don't know.
I'm surprised he doesn't do more.
It seems like you would want to hand him franchises. I feel like he'd be great at a Fast and Furious.
But the only reason he came back to Bond because they were going to reinvent it, they offered him another Brosnan, and he just didn't want to continue on in the same vein, but I wish he would have.
I'm going to look his directing credits up. What has he been doing lately?
Yeah.
I will say, though, that the relationship between... M, 007 and 006 is interesting because you get this sort of, they're about the same age. You feel like they came up through the service together.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to figure out plot-wise, not to jump too far ahead in the plot, just like when does 006 just decide to turn?
Yeah, that's weird.
After that?
Don't
after
they say because of his
face?
He's no. like, why'd you set the timer to 3 minutes?
Yeah. Like, it's like...
Dude, you were telling him to fucking kill everyone to begin with, which would have killed you. So
I thought this was planned from an early age because of his upbringing with all the Cossacks.
So you assume that, what, he doesn't want to go through with that mission?
He wasn't really shot in the face, I don't think. That was all
so
faked.
So you think that was all...
And so he's upset about the explosion happening sooner because he would have... gotten out and disappeared.
I don't
that's
like
why
it,
he's
then.
Scarred.
They need to make it clear because the scarring could have also come from a bullet and an explosion.
I don't think a bullet's gonna scar up the whole side of your face.
I mean he's not looking at him when he shoots. You know
but
what I mean?
I think it's clear enough that
apparently
that's
you
happened.
Do, but two people here don't
yeah,
think
I don't
that
think it's clear.
Really?
I thought it was really weird that's why he has turned on Bond.
One thing I can guarantee you, mm-hmm. we're gonna get a lot of emails telling us what it is.
Is that true? Do you guys get a lot of emails? Listen, I'm thrilled with those emails, and I can't wait for our new social media director to filter those emails just to get us the
We're
going to
choose someone, but just so you know, I've never seen so many emails come in, and it was heartwarming and flattering. We got so many emails from people wanting to do, I mean, so many that I literally couldn't read it. I've heard podcasts say that before, like, we get so many emails, we can't possibly read it. It was crazy. My inbox was going insane. So we'll figure out some way to choose someone, and there's some amazing contenders in there, first of all. So thank you guys so much for your interest in doing that. That's very exciting.
Genuinely appreciate it, and I'm very excited that we might be able to get some of this off of our plate and onto yours.
Yeah, I don't know how we're going to choose. We may have to just randomly choose some.
This is insane, by the way. I don't think Martin Campbell works because I feel like he doesn't need to or want to.
Maybe he really chooses projects he cares about.
So his last credit after Casino Royale is Ferris Edge of Bueller. Darkness with Liam Neeson.
What'd you say?
Ferris Bueller.
The so TV show?
Yeah.
He did Edge of Darkness with Liam Neeson.
Never seen
a movie that. I don't remember.
Yeah.
Green Lantern, which we all remember.
Mm.
One episode of the television show Last Resort.
Classic.
I've never heard of
a
any
TV
of
movie
show.
Called Reckless.
Wow.
A TV movie called Warriors. A movie called The Foreigner.
Oh, I wonder, it's like The Foreigner and Reckless, are they based on plays?
I don't know. The Foreigner is Jackie Chan and Pierce Brosnan.
Oh.
Mm.
And it comes out this year.
This year?
In October.
Oh, boy.
Mm. Hello, James Bonding episode.
Oh, man.
I love Jackie Chan.
So there's a still image from this movie. Jackie Chan and Pierce Brosnan are standing across the desk from each other, and it'll make you feel real old. Real
did you
old.
See the edit somebody
they got
did
gray hairs
with Brosnan and Spectre?
No, is it
trailer?
Any good?
It's interesting. It's interesting to think like that could have happened. I actually think in some ways Brosnan makes a better Bond looking older because he's not quite as pretty. You
would
know?
You like him to be like grizzled and... You know how Affleck's supposed to be the Dark Knight Batman?
Yeah.
How he's supposed to be the old Batman. Would you be into the idea? Let's say Daniel Craig does one more movie. Would you be into the idea of them bringing back Pierce Brosnan for one go around as an older James Bond?
As an experiment, I'd be curious, but yeah, I don't know. It's funny because you can do that by bringing Affleck in to do the older Dark Knight Batman, but every Bond basically gets to become that in their tenure, like Roger Moore especially.
Do you think Daniel Craig's now 50, he's gonna be 50.
Yeah, I think he's 49.
Yeah, he's gonna be, by the time the movie comes out, he'll be 52.
That's so shitty. I am the same age as Daniel Craig.
I'm the same age as Alex Jones.
You are?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
I mean, you're younger actually than Daniel Craig. I'm 48.
You could still do Bond.
Good to know.
We need to go younger. Have you heard about Steve Agee? He just drinks green juice. Sometimes he gets vertigo in the morning, and we'll have to wait on shooting, but...
Yeah. I mean, he'll take a Benadryl and be fine by 2.
A little sluggish.
And cut. Steve, get up off the ground.
I'm sorry. It just feels so good to lay down.
Well, let's shoot another love
Double
scene today.
Okay. Bond, James Bond.
There,
Bond.
I did it.
I'm James Bond.
Steve does the whole movie from Child's Pose. Okay, so also I feel like we'd be remiss, like I think we mentioned in the last episode, but the opening sequence inside this facility, beautifully recreated in the GoldenEye Nintendo 64 game.
That's true. That's a great game.
It's the best game.
We do need to do an episode on that.
We will.
The killing of Alec in the opening scene is a great hook because it's
totally,
it's something that you feel like, well, that's got to play into it somehow later. And it adds some real emotional stakes because usually the opening scenes are kind of fluffy.
Yeah.
This one gave it some heft.
I do like when they have nothing to do with the plot.
I miss that. I like both. I like if it's used well, I think this one is the best of both worlds. It has a little teaser for the plot or something that you don't know how it's going to play in later. but also stands on its own as a great opening sequence.
And it has the added benefit of it being in the past. You know
right.
what I
oh,
mean?
That's it's right. Like, yeah, I forget about that.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah, they jump almost 10 years.
Yeah.
Is that the biggest time jump ever? I mean, because there's the one... Brosnan has a lot of time jumps because he, in Die Another Day, is in that Korean prison.
For how long?
For the length of a title sequence.
The longest title sequence, because that song is a piece of shit.
I don't know. Is it 6 months or 6 years or something?
I feel
something?
Like it's like 18 months.
I can't remember.
Again.
9 years is such a long time. He looks... No different. There's not one more wrinkle in the eyes or nothing.
Yeah, I never thought about it. Same with the Russian soldier guy.
Yeah.
The general. That guy's good. Orimov.
Orimov?
Yeah.
Yeah, guy's real good.
He's good. He's got a great...
He's like, got a great character actor face.
Yeah. Post...
Mortem.
What's his name? Poor man's Roy Scheider. Or...
Ron Silver?
No, Roy. Poor he looks like Roy Scheider to me.
Oh, he does. Like yes, he does. I can see that totally. Oh, Roy Scheider would have been a great villain in a Bond movie.
He would have. Have you seen Marathon Man?
Yes.
Yeah. God, that's
Roy Scheider, I feel like, is so weirdly underrated for having been in like The French Connection and Jaws.
And like all that jazz.
And Sequest DSV.
Right.
Which is and Star Trek in the
Blue
Ocean.
Thunder, I mean, yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Roy Scheider, shout out. I know you're listening to us from heaven.
Also, dibs on the Roy Scheider podcast we're going to be putting out soon.
Roy Scheidering.
Scheider Freuding.
We got three listeners. Did you download it? Yeah, me too. We got one.
One is Roy Scheider's widow.
Oh,
Jesus Christ.
What? He's dead?
I know.
That's she sad. Might want to listen.
It's sad that she'd be the only listener.
Yeah.
Doing it for you, Mr. Schneider.
That motorcycle ride off the cliff is an amazing stunt.
It's a great stunt. A lot of blue screen, though.
Oh, but that's after.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The actual wide shot is incredible. Yeah, the blue screen of...
That's very true, but the blue screen's not quite good enough to sell the whole thing.
No, but I give it a pass.
I also think that's impossible, right? Wouldn't you just be falling at the same speed as the airplane?
Well, the airplane theoretically is going at somewhat of an angle, so its wings are still getting some lift.
Okay,
so it's descending slower.
Okay,
yeah. According to science that I just made up.
I also love, even though it sort of looks like miniatures when the whole complex breaks up, but there blows up at the end. I just love the look of that.
They did a lot of miniature work on this episode. This podcast. What the fuck is this? A movie we're talking about?
Yeah, that's it.
They could have killed Bond, right? Because there's that moment where he's out of the plane and then he's getting on the motorcycle and everyone puts their guns up and the general goes, wait.
I want to see this.
Like, dude, no, don't wait. Just fucking shoot him.
I did kind of like that. I'm like, I can't wait to watch this guy die driving off a cliff.
Yeah. But it's like, I don't even think he thinks he's going to jump off the cliff. I think he thinks, just wait till you see this. He's gonna see it's a dead end and have to come back and we'll shoot.
Yeah.
I thought it was pretty funny.
Shoot him right in that pretty face of his.
Yeah. The miniatures in this remind me a bit of like the Thunderbirds miniatures, in that they feel almost like so pleasantly miniature. Even
Mr.
the
Rogers
flames
neighborhood or something.
I just love it. I miss miniatures in movies.
There's a couple of great photos from the set of the special effects guys working on particularly the dish in Serenova.
Oh yeah, Derek Meddings, right? And his son did it too.
Yeah.
But Casino Royale had miniatures in it as well.
And did it?
I think cuz the whole Venetian house crumbling from the outside is like it's like I don't know, 6 or 7 or 8 feet tall. And then they composite it into the real Venice cityscape.
Couldn't even tell.
But I feel like that's missing, a little of that practical stuff is missing after Quantum of Solace, because Skyfall and then especially Spectre gets real CG. But then we've talked about this before. Some of the stuff that's actually practical looks CG because they end up kind of like treating it or adding smoke and stuff.
Yeah, once they do color correction and stuff like that, I feel like they ruin a lot of the... eye trickery that can happen.
I agree. Because the case in point is when Craig and that, what's that guy's name in Quantum of Solace that's the bad agent in the beginning?
The bad agent in the beginning.
That he chases on foot through Siena. And when he...
Oh, when, yeah.
I forget his name.
M's right hand.
Yeah.
I forget his name as well.
But when they fall through that glass window, that's real, but it just doesn't look real. And then like the Spectre Mexico City building facade falling, I think is mostly real, isn't it? Yeah.
Guys, we just want to get back to non-color corrected James Bond.
Yeah.
That's right.
I'm tired of this
gritty
sepia bullshit that the Coen brothers started.
Oh, man. Yeah. Fading.
I am a man. Constant Starro. Whole movie. Sepia.
Would you take a Coen brothers Bond film?
No. I don't know what they'd do with it.
I mean, just for a...
If they were like, we're going to do this and we're going to do it for realsies.
Yeah, imagine if it was like No Country for
Old
Men.
Might be in it.
As Bond.
Then I'd watch, yes.
With John Goodman as M.
And, well, isn't that what Atomic Blonde
is? Or no, I guess M. Emmett Walsh should play M.
Did you see Atomic Blonde yet?
I didn't, know.
Did you see Atomic Blonde yet?
I didn't see it yet. No. We should.
I've heard multiple things about it.
Yeah.
I've heard bad things about it.
That's I've heard good and
bums
bad.
Bums me out because that trailer looked amazing.
All I've heard is bad things
really?
About
I've heard
it.
Some good stuff.
Have you? From whom?
Nico Case.
Great.
Said it was
she
amazing.
She likes it.
Yeah.
Into it. Yeah. Nico's a... She's got a good taste.
That's right.
She enjoys a good flick.
That's a good enough recommendation for me. We should see it and maybe talk about it.
Love it.
We got lots of episodes.
Lots of episodes to do.
Yeah.
So little time.
That's right.
All right. Let's talk about that opening credit sequence.
Yeah. I just read there's just released The Art of the Title released an interview with Daniel Kleiman about this.
Did he apologize?
He shot almost everything in there is practical. It's just composited optically. So even though it looks very CG, like
for some reason, the thing that bothers me the most is the woman who turns her head and then there's another woman's head, same woman. That bothers me.
That's
like
the Yanis thing.
And then the thing. And then the opening of the mouth and the shooting of the Luger.
It looks
out
strange.
Of the mouth. Just looks weird.
Yeah. There's something that bothers me about the way her neck comes together in a strange little nub.
Like an Adam's apple.
Yeah, but like
weird. We have problems. We have real problems. These are the things we're looking at.
It is a bit jarring to go from what would have been License to Kill, the last Maurice Binder one, which is all that flat, monochromatic, or not monochromatic, but like there's no gradation. Everything's the same type of flat colors, into this kind of like more 3D world.
And we've talked about it before, but I think that Tina Turner does a great job.
Yeah, I like
great
that song.
Job that song. You like that song? The lyrics make no sense to me.
I'm lukewarm on the song. I think she does a great job with it.
Yeah.
But it doesn't bring me back.
I like the little string plucks.
Yeah.
That's very Bond-like.
Yeah, those little pizzicatos.
The horn section, very Bond-like.
Yeah.
Those are really the key elements for a Bond song for me, which is why I didn't really take on Sam Smith's Bond theme very warmly.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe when I revisit it.
It's got strings, right? But not like...
Yeah.
They're more...
I need a hard horn hit.
Yeah, I agree.
I think that's really key. Oh, hello.
What's that mean?
Door's open.
Your wife's escaping.
See, I'll be right back.
Later, guys. So... Also, but I do like that it's the sort of the Bond title sequence that illustrates the fall of the Iron Curtain.
Kleinman brings that into the Bond titles that was never there before. He tells a story in most of his.
Yeah.
Well, Die Another Day, this one.
Every time you say the phrase Die Another Day,
Spectre does.
The song pops into my head.
Yeah.
Spectre does.
Skyfall does a bit.
God, Skyfall's great.
Yeah, that's
gritty.
A top. Oh,
that
top
that title sequence, that song, that shirtless Adele. Hunk.
Now she's rumored to be coming back for the next one if Craig does.
Maybe,
but that still sounds like a pretty big.
Maybe
rumor
she's
to me.
Modern day Shirley Bassey as far as the Bond franchise is concerned.
That would be a no brainer to me. That would be great.
That'd be awesome. Yeah.
She hits some notes that I just give me chills every time she does it.
Yeah,
I think that the beauty of the song though is that you're getting that brassiness with a voice that can just punch through the whole thing, which is what Tina Turner brings. I'm really glad Bono didn't sing it.
Yeah, there is that demo out there, right, where he does. In fact, that's what Daniel Kleiman was given, I think, and it's like a 6-minute version.
I've never heard that.
I think there is.
Wow. Well, if you have it, let us know. Not you, personally. You might have it.
Matt, let us know if you have it.
Matt, if you have it, let us know.
You guys are sitting on it.
Matt, write in
your chairs.
Matt, could you write into the podcast and let us know that you may or may not have it?
I'll never get the email. All right, so we open on this, I guess what I would call a car flirtation scene.
A flirtation.
car flirtation. The music in this scene is brutal.
It's the worst part of this movie, I think, is the, not to take anything away from, it's David Arnold, right?
No, this is Eric Serra, remember? Oh,
well, then, thank God.
No, David Arnold would be a welcome.
Sorry I even.
Remember, don't you remember when we get to the end of this movie, what we're in for?
Yes.
We'll talk about that at the end.
Yes.
Incredible.
This music's too dated.
It was dated when it came out.
Yeah, and I think that's a real problem, because when you think back to the other James Bond movies, you get a little bit of it in the 70s. You get a little bit
talking
of it
in the car.
Yeah.
That is so weird. That music was so weird.
It's like a cartoon.
This does not go with what is happening.
God, what's happening? Are we under attack?
It's probably a package.
Jesus Christ, it's a bomb.
Yeah,
James Bomb.
I ordered a live bomb.
Thank you. Goodbye.
You're so proud of yourself.
And I'm on Benadryl. I can't believe that worked.
Could you imagine if Steve was fully aware of what's happening?
Dead, clean, straight.
So it's the Aston Martin DB5. It's sort of harkening back to Goldfinger. And you get a Ferrari. And I was reading for some reason about the production of that sequence and how hard it was to do for them because of how vastly different both of those cars handle.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, because the Aston Martin is like this beautiful old car that has like 210 horsepower. And then the Ferrari is this magnificently engineered brand new car with 450 horsepower. They had to like put shitty tires on the Ferrari.
Oh,
for it to
so
remotely,
that they're more comparable?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
They had to like really dumb down the Ferrari for it to work with the Aston Martin.
See, that's the kind of fun fact you're not going to get on any other James Bond podcast.
By the way, there's like one or two shots in that sequence where I am absolutely positive there's a male stunt driver in almost certainly. Bunker Jansen
wig. It's probably because Remy Julien did the effects, I mean, the stunts for this.
So yeah.
Probably him or one of his sons.
What do you think of the bicycle guys?
Nope. Cornball.
Yeah. Cornball, but
could be worse.
Bond-esque.
Very.
Very Roger Moore era. Yeah, like a holdover from that, for sure.
As close to a pigeon double take as we get in the Brosnan era.
No. There's got to be something.
Something worse? Something more corny, you think?
There's got to be.
Well, we'll be on the lookout for that.
Yeah, we will.
so far.
I feel like something is coming to mind. I can't think of it. I don't know.
I can't wait till we do Tomorrow Never Dies. I really can't.
Oh, boy. So then we go to the casino, and I don't care what movie, what Bond actor. I love a James Bond casino scene more than anything. It gets my goose
now
gumping.
You love a good
someone who's Baccarat.
I don't care what it is.
Someone who's watched every James Bond movie multiple times and who's seen every casino scene multiple times and who got married in a casino.
It's true.
I have no clue how Baccarat works. I still have no clue.
Read Casino Royale. He takes you on a like 2-page primer on how it works so that you understand the movie.
Still don't understand it.
But it's similar to blackjack in that you have to get, I think, as close to a 19? Nine as possible. Nine or 19, maybe.
And so then the face cards are worth one?
I don't remember.
No, it seems like someone just told me to read something that they've read.
No, I didn't say I remember.
Seems like a game that everybody playing it is improvising. They're making up the rules
words
while they're playing.
Suivi, banco.
Duhui, bank.
Suivi.
Yep.
Banco. Suivi.
Also, like, what are they playing with? Francs?
I don't know, but those cards they're playing with are
a million
as
minimal
as can be. There's nothing on the back and no numbers on the faces.
God,
of them.
That blew my mind when I was watching it for some reason, because I just can't. It would take me 5 hours to play a hand of blackjack.
Just to figure out what
I'd be
you
like,
have.
One,
the
two,
cards are
yeah.
huge.
Three, yeah. four. I don't know. Sweetie. What is this?
Banco.
What do I have? Noof. Do I have Banco?
Vivi Alanouf.
Plinko.
Yahtzee. She's got a cigar. Is this pre-Lewinsky? It is, right?
Yes.
Okay. And now, yeah, that's just interesting.
I do like, however, that she orders a vodka martini shaken, not stirred, after Pierce Brosnan says it. Because you're like, fuck yeah, that sounds like a great drink right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to have a couple tonight.
By the way, I didn't know that was Bomke Jensen until way later.
Really?
She looks different to me than she does.
She's got heavy makeup on.
I screen grabbed her and Pierce Brosnan making the two ugliest faces I've ever seen.
I think I know the one. Yeah.
And I meant to post it and I didn't. So by the time this comes up, you'll just pop over to our Instagram and you'll. Do we have an Instagram account?
No, we should, baby.
We got to secure that before this episode goes up.
That's true.
Yeah. Someone's going to squat on that URL.
When he leaves the casino, he just goes running through what is like a ballet pantomime outside.
Yeah,
and even
very...
for Bond, that's maybe it's just having done enough theater in my time. I feel it's very rude to just run through someone's show, no matter
Absolutely.
How French and balletic it is, or pantomime.
Even if it's ballet mimes,
yeah,
you feel like you shouldn't be able to run through that?
I do think it's presumptuous of him, because also those people are there to see whatever... that is a ballet baby doll getting
you know
flower
what?
From someone.
Do you know what happened? No. I'll tell you why that was a good thing. That audience gathered, and we're like, oh, there's going to be a little performance here. It's great. Oh, okay. And then they see what the performance is, and they're like, shit, should we leave? They're going to see us. We can't leave. We're stuck here now. Fuck.
Well,
something
God,
needs
that
to happen.
Just, he ran. He left. Let's go,
go
follow him. That they should show the rest of that scene where everybody gets up and leaves.
The worst, though, when you sit down for something like a street performer or something, or you stand there,
yeah,
and then they start, and you're like, oh, this is not something I'm going to enjoy, but you're locked in.
Yeah.
Because you're not a rude Gus.
You know the great musician Steve Earle, right?
Yeah.
Well, when he got out of prison, he was trying to rebuild his career, and so he did a performance at the Long Beach Tower Records, and right in the center of the store, and we went to see him, and we were the only ones there. And so we showed up right at the beginning, and it was just sort of awkward and strange, but we felt like we couldn't leave. So we're standing 3 feet from him, just me and my girlfriend at the time, watching Steve Earle do acoustic guitar set for like 45 minutes.
Oh, my God.
Did he do the Darth Vader voice?
I don't think so.
It's James Earl Jones.
Oh.
That did not land well.
No, I got it. I just wish that Matt had gotten it.
Yeah.
I didn't. Hey, tag me out next time.
So... let me ask this, Matt, in that situation, did anyone else like filter in, or were you alone the entire time?
The only other person there was the person from the now defunct radio station that was kind of like presenting it.
Oof.
Yeah. But he then went on to do great things. He was on The Wire and he was.
But were you a fan of his, and that's why you went, or were you into our records and were like, oh, I'll see
no,
you.
No, I went to see him. Yeah. I was sort of a fan, yeah.
That's sort of.
That's not enough to stand
there. Hey, I've heard
there
of this guy's
people.
Name. Let's go watch him.
He's got two first names. Good enough for me.
So what do we think of the fact that the Aston Martin has a fax machine?
Or a champagne chiller.
The champagne chiller... 100% I buy.
Yeah, I like that.
You know, there's a lot of... they sell... it's an option available in a lot of the bigger luxury sedans is a cooler in the middle of the seats.
Uh-huh.
Like, it's a weird option.
That was in a Toyota minivan in the 80s. They had a little, like, ice maker.
Yeah. That's true.
How long are your fucking trips that you're needing an ice maker?
Good question. Yeah. I don't know.
If you know, please don't write in.
Keep it to yourself.
So that's the first we hear of the new Moneypenny, Samantha Bond.
Yeah, she's good.
She's great.
She's really good.
And yeah, he gets a fax. He sends the picture, right?
Yeah.
He sends the picture for her, gets the fax with the information. And here's another part I don't understand of the plot of this movie. The admiral that she's with, or colonel, what is he?
Yeah, something. I'm not sure.
She pulls rank. He's a commander. Bond's a commander.
He was cast only for his sex death face, though.
Which is great. He plays a great corpse.
Yeah. He reminds me of Jerry Blank's father in Strangers with Candy.
Oh, my God.
I was thinking of Strangers with Candy this morning. I was always thinking of Strangers
That's
with
one
Candy.
Of the best
I quoted
shows
it
ever.
When you went to the bathroom.
That's
nice
right.
Camel toe, Susie.
Remember how much you and I used to watch that?
Oh, my
like,
God.
When the DVDs came out each time, we'd get together and watch yep. those.
God, it's the best. It's the I best. Have the Trapper Keeper set.
Oh, so do I. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I also own it on iTunes.
I do too. It's the
still
only show
in
I own.
Fucking standard definition.
Yeah.
Yep.
Like,
yeah.
Not widescreen.
It's the only show I own all of it in iTunes.
Yeah.
God, you kids haven't watched Strangers with Candy.
Do yourself a favor.
You're yeah. missing
the
out.
The best show.
You get the just amazing, amazing performances out of Amy Sedaris.
Timmy's coming over. We're going to play some liars poker.
I quoted it when we were in the Goldberg. We're writing in the Goldberg's room, and someone throws in a line of like, "I got something to say."
I got something to say.
I got something
I'm like
to
the only
say.
One in the room who like yells it out like oh, that. God. I don't think they know what I'm talking about.
I know where we can get a cinder block. Where? From that.
What's your favorite? What's your favorite episode of Stranger with Candy?
Oh fuck.
Mine by far is. The one where she like traps Tammy Little Nut in the hotel.
Yeah.
What goes on in that one? I'm trying to remember because I know that's the one I've watched the most.
Tammy Little Nut.
It's the baby one. It's,
the baby
it's
one, yes.
The,
oh, God.
Where they, for home ec or whatever class, they have to pretend they have a baby for. Or no, they get an actual get baby an actual for baby. A week.
Yeah, that's right. And she becomes like kind of an abusive husband to
yes.
Tammy
yeah.
Little Nut.
Yes.
Yeah.
My favorite is when Paul Dinello's face.
Yes, that's another
comes
one of my
off,
favorites.
Ripped off.
Oh God, that one's incredible.
It's like fucking amazing.
I like the glint one where they.
Oh
make,
yes.
The
K hole.
I can make glint. I can make drugs.
And
she
also the
popular.
Racism episode where they bring in Tim Meadows to counsel
yeah.
the school.
Yeah.
I'm a black man and also an astronaut. That frightens you, doesn't it?
Well, welcome to Jerry Blanking.
Blanking.
All right. Sorry. That was a digression.
Ooh, that's a good
but
idea.
Everyone go watch Strangers with Candy.
Please.
Yeah. Well, we cut. We
oh, but
Russian
about the plot. The problem with the plot that I had
oh,
regarding
what?
Admiral Guy. The person that she is then with the next day, is that a double?
Oh, yeah. I wondered about that, too.
Like, it's not explained at all. Is it just the fucking plot to Thunderball, you know?
Kind of,
where they
yeah.
pull the... they. Plastic surgery
yeah,
guy
really
to look
show.
Like a.
In fact, I remember yeah. remarking to myself that, like, oh, that must be a double, and we're going to see that in a bit, and
we
never do. Yeah.
We don't see it. Mm. All right. Hey, there's a brand new show here at Earwolf. It's called Homophilia, and you should subscribe now.
Homophilia is a show where Dave Holmes and Matt McConkie meet with fantastic LGBT celebrities and grill them about what they're loving, their favorite movie, TV, and music, and who they're loving, whether it's a grinder fling or a long-term partner.
If you heard Matt's miniseries Rock Bottom on Bitch Sesh, this is a lot like that.
Matt's a writer for Bajillion Dollar Properties and also the official film critic of Bitch Sesh. And he's teamed up with writer, TV host, and former MTV VJ Dave Holmes to make Homophilia.
It's a queer comedy party that celebrates pop culture obsessions and digs into celebrities' personal lives.
The first guest is the wonderful and hilarious Cameron Esposito, and episodes come out on Fridays.
Subscribe to Homophilia in Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen. And if you like it, tell a friend.
Then we cut to the computer Ice Station Zebra or whatever, and we meet Boris and Natalia.
Alan Cumming.
Yeah.
What do you think? Love him.
Yeah.
I love
like
him.
I mean, I love him as an actor always.
He
yeah. He's yeah. pretty over the top here, but
he
it pretty
job.
Much works.
I think you have to be over the top because I don't think anyone else is over the top in this movie except on a top.
Yeah. Yeah.
She's on a top.
Over the top.
And I like always like peripheral henchmen being 50 times bigger than the actual villain.
Yeah. Yeah. He's good. He's good. He would not survive in today's workplace with all his sexual harassing. I mean, neither would Bond for that matter. But the fact that he just pops up.
Bond
on
even
the
gets
screen,
called a misogynist in this episode.
I know, yeah, a few times.
Misogynist dinosaur.
Yeah. God, that scene is so
sexist,
good.
Sexist misogynist dinosaur.
That speech of M's is.
Relic of the Cold War.
Is that one of the best speeches in all of the Bond movies? Just delivery,
it's
I think
on the
writing.
Nose.
It, yeah, but it also ends with her saying, like, good luck. So she's not just a hard ass, but that just her delivery on that and what it did for the series at the time.
Completely. Yeah. And you also totally forget about a world where Judi Dench isn't completely 100% accepted as M.
Right.
Like, yeah. It's crazy. She has been in every James Bond movie since that.
Yeah.
She's been in every single one.
Yeah, that's right.
I didn't even remember that when she popped up. I was like, has she been doing this since this movie?
Yes. Yeah.
That is so crazy to me.
I just love that she says, you think I don't have the balls, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, pure writing. Is there a better speech? Like, there's Silva's monologue. As far as actual speeches go, like writing in a Bond film.
Yeah.
Because Bond very rarely gets like a monologue.
I bet you could put all of James Bond's dialogue from all 24 movies together into a script and it would not be a full length movie.
Right.
Because he talks so little.
I'm trying.
Doesn't have to.
I mean, a villain it's usually heavy exposition. This one is just all character. It's really good.
Yeah. So, yeah, Dame Judi Dench, we salute you. Welcome to the fold.
Yeah. Boris's Russian hacking character is more timely than ever right now, and it was weird to watch it in that context.
It is, I find it all very strange to watch all of the old Russian stuff now.
Yeah.
We're in a fucking crazy time.
Whatever do you mean?
I just mean the fact that we're between bonds and we haven't had a movie out in so long. Yeah. I just feel like we...
Hack that, Russia.
Emails.
Keyboard buttons.
People are hacking HBO now. Ugh.
Alt escape elite.
I'm invincible. Lughead. Lughead? Is that what he's saying?
Yeah.
All right.
Luggage. Slow slughead.
Slughead.
Slughead. Slughead.
Slughead.
He's Russian. He's so Russian. Slughead.
You see,
even like he even name checks borscht at one point, doesn't he?
Yes, can't he does. With you.
Yeah.
What is?
Yeah. He's doing the best he can.
Yeah, he says borscht.
Like, is it like in "You Bet Your Borscht"? I do. Yeah. So that felt like it was straight out of '60s Batman.
That was horrible.
You know who I love in this movie? I absolutely love is Tanner.
Sure.
He feels like he comes to work because that's all he has. His wife has left him.
Who's Tanner?
He was just that like
Explain
middle manager in MI6 office, and he's just slightly disheveled, and it feels like he's barely holding it together.
Absolutely. And the scene that reminded me of Bond in World Is Not Enough when he's pissed at Tanner. And he's like, Tanner, get over here.
Yeah.
And he wants to get on the case. He pulls him aside, and he's just getting so much shit. He gets all the shit.
I know.
Like he gets the shit from everybody.
He does. He's the whipping boy. But this is what I think is a strong argument for doing a universe of Bond and not going for the obvious choices. But I want to see Tanner's life after hours. And he goes home, does a microwave dinner.
Swanson's hungry man.
Or he goes to, like, have you ever been to London and they have those like kind of sleazy kino casinos where you can go in and they just like people are smoking like crazy and he just goes to that for hours and I spent my child's education fund, but it doesn't matter because she doesn't talk to me.
How annoying would it be to cut something out of this podcast where I was about to say something to you right now?
What?
I'm asking you how annoying it would be. Otherwise I'll just wait till after the show's over.
You want to say something off record?
Yeah.
Racist.
If it'd be annoying, I'll just talk about it afterwards.
Yeah, I don't want to edit, but don't forget. Okay.
We'll just not forget.
All right. Boy, the listener.
Now the listeners know Matt's racist, but they don't know to which group.
Oh, thank God you actually cut that. I'm sorry I couldn't hold it back, Matt. Whenever you're talking about these white
and
middle managers.
Back.
I can't believe it.
That's courtesy to a fellow podcaster right there.
Every single thing about Natalia's style in this movie just gets my ovaries going. I think it's because that's what girls look like when I was in college, you know, and it just.
I do love a tights skirt situation.
And her hair.
And a nice sweater.
Yeah. She's
a Bond girl I could take home to mama.
Yeah. She's classy yet very sexy. She's
smart.
Got it all. She's smart.
She knows how to handle a pistol.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, speaking of that.
Yeah.
I was thinking about that. Bond's weapon of choice, right? Walther PPK?
Yes, sir.
took a break in the Brosnan years. That's another ding on the Brosnan era, but comes back for Daniel Craig. But at the point in Spectre when he's using this, and I researched this, the gun is 88 years old. It was designed in 1929.
Uh-huh.
That would be the equivalent of Sean Connery using like a Colt Peacemaker in Dr. No. That's how old that gun is.
How awesome would that be, though?
Well, I mean, Roger Moore uses that Smith & Wesson.
Colt Peacemaker.
Man with the Golden Gun on the novel, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, I mean, that is an old, old gun at this point.
It's an old gun, but it's a small, compact gun. They still sell plenty of them.
Yeah.
They still make it.
I got eight.
Wow.
I've never fired one. Have you?
Take one. I don't think so.
We should do that.
I used to have a little, like...
Let's go to Rooker's Gun Range.
Let's do it.
Who?
Michael Rooker.
Oh, would he have us over for a podcast?
Maybe.
We could do a...
He's a nut. I love it. That's great.
He's like co-owner of one of the biggest outdoor gun ranges in California.
Really?
Yeah. Up in the Sunland, valley.
Yeah.
Rooker's 10-acre gun?
That's what it's called. Rooker's 10-acre gun shoot.
Yeah. I heard of that.
Yeah.
You heard of Rooker's 10-acre gun shoot? That's weird.
No rules gun range.
No rules gun range. That's right.
Yeah. Every single M office in this franchise gets my engine purring. Even this modern one, they still managed to wood panel it, even though they did it more modern.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll still take the old classic M style, but this one looks really good, too.
I like a tinted glass-covered bookcase.
Yeah.
Ooh, you know, that's good.
I also just enjoyed that, like, she had beautiful windows, and you could see out into London.
They're drinking bourbon. Does classic M ever drink with Bond?
In Goldfinger. They have dinner. Yeah. Felt weird to be like, your predecessor kept a bottle of cognac in that drawer. Like, she hadn't moved this person's stuff out of the office by now.
Well maybe he left it as a legacy thing. I'd like to think that. There's some honor among... Yeah, all right.
Thanks, good. Matt. Thanks for solving that problem.
I have a fun idea.
Let's hear it.
What if Michael Wilson's cameo changed every time you watched one of these movies?
Who's Michael Wilson?
He's one of the producers, but he's in almost every one of the film, like in the background or something.
He's usually pretty obvious. Yeah. I think he stands out mostly because of his mustache.
Yeah, or his voice is very nasally.
Oh, yeah, when he does speak, yes.
Yeah, because he's not English. But that would be amazing if he was like just revolving cameos, like they did different editions like Clue had different endings.
In the same movie?
Yeah, he would change throughout the movie, depending on what version.
Like you could activate the Michael G. Wilson filter on the Blu-ray, and occasionally you'd get every scene that he was in, so you'd be watching a movie in every scene.
Yeah, then sometimes he's just playing Bond. See, that to me is a reason.
Your predecessor kept a bottle of cognac in the drawer.
Sir, you're a sexist, misogynist dinosaur.
He played M, too? This guy's amazing.
He plays M, and,
come back alive, Bond.
Yeah, Bond, come back alive.
Bond, you think I don't have the balls to send a man off to die?
Mon, can you hand me my nasal spray that my predecessor left for me?
Oh, that's straight up David Lynch. I need my Vicks vapor inhaler.
Could you turn on the dehumidifier when you come in the room? Is it too much to ask?
I read the briefing. I wrote it.
I read it.
It has a certain prose style. If you haven't noticed, I'm trying to flower it up a little since my predecessor was so cold. Anyway, how did I get this job? I'm an American. Did you notice how fucking enormous Q's hands are?
No.
I think he's got inflammation or something in this movie. They are meat hooks.
No, if that was a submarine sandwich. No. That wasn't
one finger?
No.
Oh, I had it wrong.
Could you imagine what a terrible disease? All five of my fingers are submarine sandwiches.
What a delicious disease. Look, I'm not knocking Desmond Llewellyn. God knows I love that man. But if you haven't watched this film and are going to watch it after this, just pay close attention to the size of his hands in this movie.
I didn't notice.
Oh, it's ridiculous. I think that his... when did he stop learning the script?
I think early on. But this one, you feel it.
It also might be that his eyes don't really have a lot of white left to them.
What do you mean, like he's all iris?
Yeah, because you can't quite tell what he's looking at.
Is he all cataract?
The late, great Desmond. We love Desmond Llewellyn.
And
on
I actually
podcast.
Welcome his lion issues because they add an element of fun to those scenes. That
yes, but like you can't. The line of sight for him is constantly off. And you just assume that he's like reading cue cards, but there's also a decent chance that his eye line is just off.
Yeah, he is kind of looking in a strange direction at times. Yeah.
I find that odd.
It's just so sad, too. We've talked about this before, that he did it for so long and that he didn't even die of old age. He died of a car accident. Like, if that accident hadn't happened, he could have at least probably completed the Brosnan era. Oh, that would be amazing.
But bully on them for beautifully writing him out.
I know. That's another good little speech.
It's not a great speech. I mean,
I like it.
Never let them see you bleed. You've never said that in the entire franchise. You've had 18 movies to that point where you could have picked a line of dialogue for him.
Yeah.
Always have an escape plan makes total sense. I mean, he's never said that, but that's essentially what Q does, is make escape plans for Bond by building things that allow him to escape. But never let them see you bleed is just like, what? Who said that?
Right.
He loved a good stirred martini, though.
And a good turd starmini. Now we meet Joe Dan Baker.
I'm sorry, but like those scenes in there, in you know, with all the gadgets, is it always that jokey? I don't remember.
Yeah, for the Roger Moore era.
But there was like John Hughes level shit in the background. I know. Like the guy getting
like Naked Gun level
in the phone booth when the airbag comes in, and then like
it reminds me of a Naked Gun.
And then later you see them hauling the phone booth out, and the guy's still smashed in it. That's so John Hughes.
Yeah, yeah.
I like the young guy that replaced it.
Yeah, he's great.
What did you think of John Cleese's short tenure?
For those movies, especially for Die Another Day, why not?
Yeah,
you know, and he's great. There's a series called London Spy that is really good, and Ben Whishaw's in it. I highly recommend
it. Ben Whishaw's a fabulous actor.
Did you see Matt Holness's spy thing?
No, I didn't even heard of it.
I feel like, I could be wrong, but I feel like it was only released on VHS.
Was it pre-Dark Place?
No, this was like maybe 4 years ago, years ago. Rob Schraub bought it online and we watched it. It's awesome. Like a little spy.
I gotta see that
movie. But it's,
if there's something only released on VHS, Rob Schraub has it.
Yeah,
I think it's only VHS.
Oh, I forgot to mention, so because this film is scored by Eric Serra, and it's so like it's violently missing John Barry, I watched The Specialist with Sylvester Stallone and Sharon Stone. That has a John Barry score, and it had to have been one that he had just sitting around, because there are times when it gets so Bond. I'd really like somebody to take the score from The Specialist and put it on GoldenEye and see how it works. It's so strange to watch a shitty Sylvester Stallone movie and then have some brilliant John Barry melody.
How would you even go about getting the scoreless copy of the movie?
Or the score to The Specialist.
That I feel like you can find on vinyl or something.
I don't know, but isn't there a David Arnold version of GoldenEye that somebody did or something?
I don't know. Again,
it could be.
I just love the franchise. I'm not an expert.
I'm a lover. Are you with me?
Sure am.
We meet Joe Don Baker. A Gun for George. That was incredible.
Wow. And I'm pretty sure it's only on VHS.
I love that guy.
Joe Don Baker. Yeah, let's talk about Joe Don Baker.
Let's talk about his tattoo, Muffy, and how that's another spinoff opportunity to me. A spinoff movie about Muffy.
I love Joe Don Baker in this.
Yeah.
But it's a poor replacement for Felix Leiter.
Even if Joe Don Baker's playing him.
At the end of License to Kill, what is Felix's physical state?
He's got, I think, one arm and one leg, like the books. Oh, I read the Felix Leiter comic book. The first issue, anyway. It's pretty good. It's, you know, it's a lot. It moves super quick because it's just a lot of, like, kind of intense visual stuff.
Do they have any panels where, like, they just interact with James Bond very quickly?
He does interact with James Bond.
What do you think of Joe Don Baker, Steve?
Who is Joe Don Baker?
He plays Wade, the American CIA.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
But he's two movies away from having played a villain in a Bond movie. He was the bad guy, Brad Whitaker, in Living Daylights.
Oh.
And they just brought him back as a different character.
He's awesome.
Why do you think he wasn't just Felix Leiter? Why make him Wade?
I think probably because he played a villain in Living Daylights.
And maybe he's too comedic for Felix Leiter. He's too much of a schlub or something.
Yeah.
Although, I mean, you got Cease Linder and Goldfinger, who's no...
From what I hear from Jonah Ray, Jonah Baker is not a huge fan of the Mystery Science Theater treatment. He did not quite understand the joke.
Really? I'm always thrown by Minnie Driver in this movie.
Yeah, that was weird. I was like, is that Minnie Driver?
But this time it made me think I got to get her for I Was There Too to talk about this film. That would be amazing.
Robbie Coltrane appears.
Oh, he's great. I love him. That character, I feel like, at least for the Brosnan era, is as established as a Felix Leiter. I wouldn't mind in Craig's era to bring back the character.
Yeah, sure, but he's dead.
Right. That's right.
But I will say that I think Robbie Coltrane is just delightful.
Yeah, he's really good.
This movie has a lot of great peripheral actors, just a lot of great ensemble pieces.
I think that's another sort of unsung thing about Martin Campbell is casting. He's really good at casting. Everybody's good in this movie.
So the thing about Robbie Coltrane's character, though, is that he... I love that you get this backstory with Bond and Robbie Coltrane, and the fact that my favorite line in the movie is when Jodan Baker's talking about his limp.
Uh-huh.
And James Bond's like, who do you think gave him the limp?
Yeah. That's a good one.
It's great.
Yeah. The one that was a little too much.
To it, and he mentions it too when he's
Walter PPK.
When, especially when it's cold, my leg aches every day.
Let me ask you something. When Bond and Natalia, Bond and Onatopp are in the car and she delivers him to that place, he knocks her out with one of those karate chop back.
One of those classic, and I got to say, Roger Moore patented karate chops.
I want to know, because that trope has basically run its course. You don't see that as much in movies anymore. People aren't buying it.
Right.
What's the first and the last karate chop back of the neck knockout? I'm sure this isn't the last, but this is probably around the time when it's dying down. Probably around 2000.
It is such a...
That's so
like,
weird.
Like, there seems to be, like, some sort of nerve point. It's the...
But no human has ever been really knocked out.
Well, it's the equivalent of the Vulcan neck pain.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
You know? And I'd almost buy that more.
Yeah, well, that's at least sci-fi. Like, that's a massage move.
Yes, I've seen a masseuse do that many times.
Yeah.
Knock someone out. Oh, shit, sorry.
Another example of Campbell's filmmaking that I love is the, like, smash cut to Bond waking up with Natalia screaming in the helicopter.
I like, really like
you're
that.
You're the
that
audience going, like, really where like are that. We? What are we doing?
That was great.
Very good.
I also like the half a second where Bond is taking everything in and he immediately, like, seems to be immediately comfortable with the situation he's in. And looking, and he
I'd
sees
be comfortable
the
too with a giant ejector button right next to my head.
Whoever designed that cockpit,
that's crazy
ergonomically, it's possibly the worst thing I've ever seen in my life. If you're trying to keep a helicopter floating, if you're trying to floating, flying, which in and
you
of
can't
itself
have an ejector
is so not stable as it is.
Right, your head's going to be bobbing.
Helicopters.
Back and forth.
Punch physics in the mouth. Helicopters are flying in spite
They're
of
like
physics.
Bees.
And they shouldn't
they
be able
shouldn't
to fly.
Fly.
And you all the time are having to keep two hands on the yoke. Again, I'm saying yoke. I don't know why, but
the,
I am.
The stick?
Honestly, I'd have to like hit it with the back of my hand. I probably couldn't put enough pressure on it. I'd have to turn awkwardly. I'd probably twist like what's left of my lower back. I'd probably die. I wouldn't have a chance. I would die. I wouldn't be able to eject.
Well, thank God you would, because there would be a giant ejector seat button next to your head. In fact, you would eject accidentally probably right when you took off.
It's just hard. It's just a hard head hit that's going to cause it to happen, because even that angle looks odd. Like, it looks like Pierce Brosnan is barely going to get there.
Yeah, he has to give it, try a few times.
That
but also, isn't that going to just shoot you into the blades of the helicopter?
No, because it showed the helicopter blades detach first, right?
Oh, okay.
The whole thing felt like something that they put into the script and like
they wrote themselves into a situation.
Or they're like, this is essentially what we'll do, but we'll fix it later, and then never got to it.
Yeah.
But it's still the end
it's
effect of
right next to your head.
And
just
then,
in case your hands are tied.
What do you think of the reveal of Alec?
That's good. It's good. It's an interesting like place they are with the old statues and stuff. It's kind of thematically cool. Like it.
I like Sean Bean.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah. I love Sean Bean.
Yeah, he's good.
He could have been a Bond.
I think he was considered at one point.
Really?
Yeah. In fact, that's why they went for him in this role, because it was like the antimatter Bond.
You know who it was going to be if it wasn't Pierce Brosnan, right? The studio's choice?
Wink Martindale?
Paul McGann.
Paul McGann.
He played Doctor Who in the Fox Doctor Who TV movie from the mid-90s. He was the studio's choice for James Bond. And he was the contingency plan for if Pierce Brosnan couldn't do it.
Ah, he's got a good look. He's kind of gruff.
I would also buy Sean Bean as, like you were talking earlier, an old James Bond.
Yeah.
Ed Stark, hello.
I think Paul McGann looks awesome. I didn't know this. He kind of looks like a young Alan Rickman.
Oh, yeah, I could see that for sure.
Oh, yeah, yeah. James. People listening are not going to know what we are fucking
doing. I'm doing Alan Rickman. Is it not clear?
No, shut up. You're doing Daddy Warbucks. He played Daddy Warbucks.
Yeah, that's right. Well, we're almost to the iconic scene from this movie, which is
the halfway point.
Jeez, that's a really big problem for Bond movies in general, is the third act slog. And I was trying to think about Bond movies that get that done successfully, and there's not a ton.
It's set piece, set piece, set piece. That's the problem.
I think the best ones that get it done right are the ones that use character building in the third act. So like Skyfall works really well because he's on the road with Judi Dench, and we're not getting a huge action sequence for a while, but we're learning about their relationship and it doesn't feel long.
Right.
Casino Royale handles it really well, but is so long a third act.
Casino Royale ends, we've talked about it, ends twice.
It does. Oh, it does feel long, but I still think it does it well. But I do notice the third act. Skyfall, I don't really notice the third act. I'm with it. The Roger Moore third acts and the Connery third acts are pretty rough.
I think that the other interesting thing that I noticed about this is that the Bond movies of the late 80s into the 90s, I feel like there's a lot of shoe leather. You know what I mean? A lot of like people
detectives?
Walking places without using editing to
get You mean us. Like literally like in literally Spy Who like, Loved Me, they're walking through the desert, or Quantum of Solace, they're walking through
I
the
think
desert.
There's a lot of like stuff we can lose. Like I don't need this establishing shot of the computer store with her also walking into the computer store and opening
that
the door of the
drags.
Computer store and going into the computer store. I don't need
it. It really drags if you know the film too, because you're still going like, we haven't even gotten to Cuba yet.
Yeah.
And that's
totally.
The whole,
you know,
really
when they
the
got to Cuba
act.
When I was watching it last night, or the night before rather, they got to Cuba and I was like, I forgot
all that interior stuff happened in Cuba.
They have to go to Cuba.
Yeah.
It doesn't help that it comes on the heels of the tank chase, which is amazing.
That was great.
It's superb.
Tank chase is such a good... I think it's the second best chase in the James Bond movie.
Oh, boy. I don't know about that. What would you put first?
I would put the Quantum of Solace opening chase.
Well, I would put that one ahead of the tank chase for sure, but I'm trying to think if there's another... I actually love the car chase. It's a one car chase in View to a Kill. I love it. It's a
that
cartoon, but it's incredible. Okay, so you need two.
I need two vehicles.
Well, I mean, he's technically chasing a boat.
I'll allow it.
But there's also the For Your Eyes Only car chase is pretty good.
That tank, though.
Yeah, maybe.
Just going so fast.
Yeah,
and
I
like,
guess you're right. Yeah.
Going sideways.
It's on asphalt, so it's sliding.
Oh,
it can't get traction.
That
oh my
first
God.
Turn into the building where it tries to make it into that like under archway,
just
and it just
to
barrels
the
through
yeah.
the bricks. Also, it's like, I think Campbell's doing like some Spielbergian action here, because you think when he hits that pedestal and the horse statue rides on top of the tank, like this is just there for a joke, but it ends up becoming that kind of like Spielberg cause and effect thing where it hits the bridge, drops down, and knocks out
onto
two police
two cars.
So it actually has a purpose, and so it's comedic but also kind of useful. It's really good. Obviously, the music helps. It's the first time we feel like we're getting.
Yes, and we have time in this chase for the guy being chased to kind of turn into the drunk guy from Moonraker. yeah. and just swip from his flask and like,
he just turns into a full-on alcoholic. Yeah. I do like.
I love that he's doing comedy at that point.
I like the reveal too of when you first see the tank just bust through that wall behind.
Oh, it's like, so holy shit.
It's way bigger than you even would have thought. It's
because you see him see the tank and you know, all right, he's going to use the tank, but you probably think he's just going to shoot up the place.
He could have shot that train. Yeah.
When they are in the train and it's about to blow up and they escape, do you know? Well, I have a couple things, but
you don't. Or you
I like it. I like the layer.
It's like a cool looking train.
Yeah. I like it's the layer of a train.
But when they run out of that train because it's about to explode, did you notice that, like, they pop out of that ground vent? He goes first. Like, he doesn't even let him get out.
Well, he's got to save the world.
Here's something, if you haven't watched the film, two things to look for. The size of Q's hands. And when the gunfight happens on the train and Brosnan goes to, is he trying to shut the door or open the door? Do you remember that moment? He makes a little Brosnan noise. And this is part of my problem with Brosnan's Bond is he fits in these little noises where other Bonds wouldn't. So look for this when he goes to do this and he goes and he grabs the door handle and he just makes this little noise.
What do you describe it as hurt acting, right? That's that's your phrase.
Because also when Onatopp is squeezing him, he's going and his jaw is just convulsing and
it's really particularly noticeable because you're dealing with a henchman that kills with her legs.
I guess, but like it does go to my theory that the other Bond actors could kind of walk away from Bond and be okay, and he wants it a little bit. It's like that thing that Anne Hathaway or Joseph Gordon-Levitt have. You can see their desire to act is bigger than what the character needs. Like they're having a little too much fun.
That's interesting.
Now, I applaud them. I like that they're having fun. And when he's driving the tank, it's the good kind. Like you can see Brosnan's going like, I'm fucking James Bond. And it's like, it feels
I'm
great.
I'm driving a fucking tank.
It's really fun to watch. But there are times when he's
when
like,
he, I think
getting
when
hurt.
He, when he straightens his tie. I made the okay sign.
That's yeah, good, me too. I think it's the tie straightening
that
underwater that.
Tie straightening was great. The tie straightening underwater is ridiculous.
Because the tie straightening in the tank is like, that's no worse than Craig straightening his cufflinks in the in the train. It all works. Yeah.
I like that James Bond still wants to look good.
Yeah.
Do you remember when they were shooting Casino Royale and no one knew a lot about Daniel Craig or how he would be? And then that rumor or report came out that he had broken a rib.
Yeah.
And I was like, what a pussy.
Oh,
I was like, this guy. And then I was like, I saw the movie and I'm like, he's the fucking best.
Yeah, he's the best.
I mean, when you're doing take after take of... I bet they had him run. I bet you're right, Matt. I bet they wanted him to run out of that lair.
You're right. I never put that together that he probably is
I bet
just...
they wanted him to run out of that lair, and he's probably just like, I fucking tore my ACL.
Or even
so
everyone
going
is like
to walk determined.
You gotta
out of this
we're gonna make sense of this, even if everyone is in agreement. Well, like you need to do this as a badass walker. Yeah, you're probably right.
Walker.
Yeah. Hmm. Well, I can't wait till Daniel comes back on the pod.
In The Man Sings Bullets. I researched GoldenEye, and because I knew that the name had come, he named his estate after an intelligence operation he did to like work with Gibraltar and Spain. But I wondered why that operation was called GoldenEye, and I couldn't find anything. But did you know Bob Marley bought GoldenEye?
I didn't know that.
After for like a year.
No, that's awesome.
Yeah.
But
I'm sure Ian Fleming
like
would have loved that.
Dig it, man.
I say, who's going to own this after me?
Well, it's a reggae superstar.
Come again?
A lot of marijuana.
What now?
Yes, he's going to be all over your estate. He'll be smoking marijuana.
With all his music friends.
Oh.
Do you think he ever smoked a joint through the long cigarette?
Oh, holder, that would be amazing.
On GoldenEye. God damn it, Bob Marley, if you're out there. I know you are.
I'm having a 3-foot jazz cigarette.
3-foot jazz.
Jazz cigarette. I love it.
Oh.
I love it. You're creative, man.
Thanks, Jeff Bridges.
That was...
that hand-to-hand fight with Alec and Bond...
Great.
...inside is... That's another, like... It's directed
it's
so
really
well.
Really well choreographed, too. It's really like a... It's an evenly matched fight because they both have the same training.
It's really so good. Like that scene pumped me up. And then they get out on that gantry and that ladder, and then Brosnan drops and starts making those noises.
What do you look at him? What an insane tumble he takes, and we're somehow supposed to believe he still hangs onto a ladder.
Yeah, it reminds me of when Luke falls out of Bespin.
Yes, but...
with one arm?
Yeah.
Hear me. Leia, help.
He's falling down to a similarly sized... Although Luke also was using... By the way, it's the same face he makes when he hurts his shoulder in The World Is Not Enough.
Yeah.
When he, again, falls down the Millennium Dome.
Oh, that may be the worst of the Brosnan hurt acting.
Well, he's supposed to have ripped his shoulder apart, right?
I guess.
Wouldn't you be hurt?
No, I'm great.
Matt's known for his good shoulders.
That's right. I got four of them.
Yeah.
All right. I want to talk about this song at the end. Is there anything else we need to discuss about the movie itself?
I like him getting frozen with nitro.
Oh, that whatever that prosthetic Alan Cumming at the end is pretty...
Reminds me of... I feel like they saw Terminator 2 and were like, we should use that stuff. And don't see a way in which James Bond jumps off of that platform onto that helicopter, because the blades of that helicopter would be hitting the thing that he's on and would blow up.
Yeah, it doesn't seem how he could be close enough to do that. Yeah.
Also, what do you think of the fact that Alec Trevelyan somehow survives the fall?
Just to have the thing fall
just
on
to
him?
Have the thing.
I like that.
Just
I mean,
to watch
it is.
It.
Yeah. That was.
I like the way he falls. Like, I love how severely broken his leg obviously is.
His landing is pretty brutal. They shoot it at floor level and he falls into frame. That's pretty cool.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right.
All right.
Let's talk about it.
The Experience of Love by Eric Serra.
No.
The Experience cool. of Love.
So far, I'm following you.
This song, it's like a blight on the history of Bond films. It's awful.
Do we have any examples of Bond films using multiple songs?
Yeah, because Living Daylights ends with that Pretenders ballad.
Yes.
And then Tomorrow Never Dies that has Surrender?
The
amazing Katie Lang song at the end.
And the Sheryl Crow song, which is even more fantastic. Yep.
No.
Yep.
No. No. Everything about that movie is backwards. That movie, you should start that movie from the end and then leave 5 minutes.
I think that the movie as a whole...
I'm not done with The Experience of Love.
Okay.
That's a horrible song.
This song is like... The Experience... It's like... You know how Gallagher's brother took his act? This feels like
no, too. Was given his act.
Whatever. It feels like Peter Gabriel gave his younger, dumber brother a song and said, sing it. And that's what this is.
Yeah, like, I agree. I was shocked at how I didn't like that song at all.
It's so out of place. It's so weird.
Yeah, if you walked into the movie theater, like you showed up so early to the next showing that you were... seeing the credits from the previous movie, you'd
be like,
have
this
to look
is
at your
Demi
ticket
Moore
and go,
movie.
Oh, we're not in a,
I'm
know,
in a,
we're in the wrong theater.
I'm in a romantic drama with Demi Moore.
Yeah.
And
yes.
Woody Harrelson.
And Robert Redford.
No, it's not that one. It's called Decent Proposal, where her husband
it's a good proposal.
Proposes to her. It's a prequel.
Decently.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Robert Redford, he's in the background in one scene. And you see him doing this, stroking his chin, go,
Hey, pal, you think I should ask him if I could sleep with his wife for $800,000?
Is that what it was for, $800,000?
I thought it was a million.
Make it a million, pal.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just setting up the sequel.
Yeah.
$1 million.
The credits in this movie are short because they're still doing so many credits up front. You just don't get that in movies these days. Because I listened to this whole song and I noticed how quickly it went.
You only get these pre-credit credits with James Bond that are so detailed.
Yeah, yeah. But overall, I really enjoyed this film.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's the best Brosnan, so it wasn't difficult. I have always enjoyed GoldenEye. It's those later ones that are tough, but it was a pleasure to watch.
Here's what a new thing I'd like to introduce.
Please.
A rating system.
Oh.
Mm. Where we rate each movie on a scale of... 001 to 007.
That's brilliant.
Oh my God, that's great. Okay.
How'd
that escape you the first season?
I don't know. So
I would say, Matt, you're so dumb for not thinking of that before, but I never thought.
Well, here we are. we're here with a new season and a new twist. So this is the new segment. Just also would like to remind people that we are also concerned. We are also thinking about doing an entire episode based on who the most British person in all of James Bond is. The answer for the most British person to appear in this film.
I have to say Desmond Llewellyn.
Desmond Llewellyn.
Yeah, I think. Yeah.
Hanner's not that British, but I think the most...
the girl in the car flirtation, she's pretty British.
Oh, the psychiatrist.
She's really British. Smallbone? No, that's Moneypenny's assistant.
Chief Smallbone?
No.
Chief Smallbone of the Iroquois tribe.
I was third in line.
Chief, I'm sorry about that name.
I'm not.
Many moons have gone by.
It's ironic.
I'm a big bone chief.
What is her name?
We need to stop that right now.
What is her name?
I don't know, but she's pretty British. It's down to her, Desmond.
The evaluator.
Long. Yeah.
You know what? Let's give it to her.
So 00 to 007.
Yep. 007, of course, is the best.
I guess I'd go... I'd go 004.5 for this, I think. I'll say 004.
I have to 4.5. I have to agree with all of us. I think it's a 004. You're making it.
It could have gone up to 5 if it didn't seem long.
If it was shorter, if it was shorter.
Definitely, definitely. Yeah.
It's 004 for me.
And it got a video game.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's named after a house. You don't get many movies like that.
Mm-mm. Skyfall. Right.
I guess so, yeah. Two James Bond.
Oh, you're forgetting a great one.
I know there's a lot of chart makers out there who like making spreadsheets. Let's start it right now.
Yeah, we appreciate that.
GoldenEye gets a 004.
That's right.
And you're giving it a 4.5. You're very welcome to do that.
Yeah, I'd like to give it a
fat 4.
I like it. I don't think I'll be as charitable to the other Brosnans. But
Matt, as is the new tradition on James Bonding, we're not going in any particular order. We're going to trade off back and forth. Who gets to pick the next film? I picked GoldenEye, of course. And now, Mac Orley, it is your chance to pick. What will we all be watching for next episode?
Now, I considered Living Daylights because the 30th anniversary came up, and I like that film. But actually, I'm gonna get to business. I'm going to cover something that's been a long time coming. We're going to have Amanda Lund and Maria Blasucci back, and we're going to talk Goldfinger.
Goldfinger!
Yep. And we're going to have some fun and cover that movie from a different angle than it was covered last time.
Sure.
Both valid. You know, but
Allie and Georgia sometimes aren't on board with some ass slapping. And
did they not know anything about Bond?
Oh, they hated it.
Oh, wow.
But
not made valid points.
Yeah, and that's it was good to cover it from that angle, but we're gonna approach it more from the sort of just enjoying Bond angle this time.
Yeah.
But I'm glad it will have both.
Goldfinger, Golden Eye.
And with the golden gun then.
Yeah.
Ooh, maybe. It's
and
my
Goldfall.
Pigment. And John Goldfarb.
And Goldraker.
Quantum of Gold.
But next week, you will have our James Bond theme park special where we break down.
Next week, you will, yes.
We break down what a James Bond theme park might include, could include. And actually, even before we discussed that we were doing this, some stuff came up. For instance, the Planet Coaster Moonraker ride that someone created, plus the actual James Bond ride that did exist, License to Thrill. So we'll talk a little bit about those, but also, and more importantly, discuss what we would want to see in a James Bond theme park.
Nice.
Very exciting. So tune in next week. Paul Scheer will be with us. Hope you all enjoyed the Roger Moore tribute.
But also please subscribe if you haven't. Write a review on iTunes. That helps us out. And bump that star rating up to 007.
You know what? If you'd like to, we're going to have a social media person coming in, but something I like to do is we're going to have the MI6 Wall of Honor. And what we'll do is if you write a 5-star review, we will happily read your review on the air.
Wait a minute.
It's not for everyone.
Oh, okay.
Not every 5-star review, but you will have a chance to be picked for the Wall of Honor.
Yeah, get creative.
And every other week when we're not covering a movie, we will read our favorite 7. And you'll make the MI6 Wall of Honor.
I sure hope we remember to do this.
I'll remember to do this.
Okay.
And our new social media person, who's somewhere in our email box, will be helping us.
That's right. Steve, thanks for joining us. You have a new podcast. Why don't you tell
us
all about it?
I have a new podcast at Feral Audio called We're No Doctors that I co-host with my co-hypochondriac neurotic friend, Busy Phillips.
And you guys are doctors, right?
No, we're no doctors. We talk a lot about health and medicine, despite knowing nothing about either. We're just two neurotic hypochondriacs.
It's a great concept, and it's doing very
well. It's doing crazy good.
Yeah, really. Has this been therapeutic for you? Because every time I talk to you, you think you're dying.
I've had Adam Goldberg, who is, you know, from Saving Private Ryan and Dazed and Confused. He's been on my podcast, my first podcast, a couple of times, because he also suffers from vertigo. And so I would always say, we should do a podcast where we talk about this. And never really happened. And I was just like, I can't undertake another podcast. And then it was my ex-girlfriend, who was like, you really should do a podcast about all this crazy shit you talk about. And then I took it to Feral, and they're like, you should have a female co-host. We want you to have a female co-host. And then I saw Busy Phillips post an Instagram story about her freaking out in a MRI machine. And I was like, I think I found the co-host. Jeez, awesome.
That's great. Fantastic. Wow. So you have a guest and you just discuss your medical worries?
Sometimes guests, but we talk about, we'll have a whole, episode 3 just came out and it's all about pooping.
Love
that's
it.
Great.
And it's my least favorite talk. I hate anything to do with poop. So yeah, it was pretty funny.
Does anyone ever write in with asking for medical advice?
Because you guys are doctors.
We pre-recorded like 6 episodes, that hasn't happened yet. But yeah, there's
a good way to go.
There's an email and everything on the Instagram. You can
check it out. We're No Doctors on the Feral Audio Network.
And if you haven't already, we highly recommend you download our back catalog.
That's right. Do that, because even by this point, you've probably only got a week or so left to get it before it goes behind the Stitcher paywall.
Go get it.
But also subscribe to Stitcher, because we'll be providing some commentaries to Bond films in the future.
That are going
to
end up exclusively
on Stitcher.
Behind a paywall.
We almost did it. But I know how we can do it. James Bonding will return. James Bonding Podcast. James Bonding Podcast. James Bonding Podcast. James Bonding Podcast. Matt and
Matt and Matt. James Bonding Podcast. Hey, this is Arnie Niekamp from the Improv Fantasy Podcast, Hello from the Magic Tavern. I fell through a dimensional portal behind a Burger King in Chicago into the magical land of Foon, and I started a podcast. Season 3 has just begun with a brand new adventure to defeat the Dark Lord. If you're a new listener or you've fallen behind, Season 3 is a great jumping on point. And we've got great guests like Justin McElroy.
I sound like a fancy college professor. Fake nuts.
Rachel Bloom.
You all see my collection of men corpses and one woman.
Felicia Day and Colton Dunn.
You've seen me have intercourse with a variety of species.
It's a bummer.
Andy Daly.
You have the members of Genesis listed, but Phil Collins has crossed out and then circled and crossed out again.
Yes, I have killed Phil Collins twice.
Thomas Middleditch.
Jesus! I mean, Jazos! Ruler of the Eighth Circle!
And that's just the beginning. Season 3 of Hello from the Magic Tavern is out now. Listen in Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com. Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.